Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Selling Greenville, your favorite real estate podcast here in lovely Greenville, South Carolina. I'm your host, as always, Stan McCune, realtor right here in the Greenville area. You can find all of my contact information in the show notes if you need to reach out to me for any of your Greenville-based real estate needs. And just a reminder, as always, please like, rate, review, subscribe, download, comment, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Even if you delete the episode, download it. Just any of those things, all of those things help get the show out to as many people as possible and ensure that you won't miss future content that I produce in the show, which I think will be really helpful content for you guys. I've got a lot of great stuff in the pipeline, I believe. Well, I know from my opinion that I've got great stuff in the pipeline. I believe that you will think it's great stuff as well. So please, if you don't mind, please support the show that way and ensure that you won't get any episodes that fly under the radar that you miss. Today, we're going to be doing something I have never done before on the show. I have done individual listener questions before, but today we are doing a mailbag episode, or what some people would call Q&A, where I actually solicited questions from several of you. I got some really great questions, some that are funny, tongue-in-cheek. I'm going to answer those as well, some that are more serious. And like I said, this is the first time I've done this, so I'm excited about this, and I hope we can do some more of these sorts of episodes in the future. But basically, I'm just going to run down several questions. These are not in any particular order, but I'm going to go through several questions and answer these as we go. So we're going to start off with a YouTube question from Down Under Drover. Down Under Drover asks, this is actually in response to my episode a few weeks ago, where I discussed the National Association of Realtors statistics, which indicated that the real estate market is being led by millennials and boomers. Down Under Drover wants to know, where did Gen X go to? Well, Down Under Drover, that's a great question. Now, I did in that podcast address Gen X, but I will readdress it here. Gen X has two very unique things when it comes to their impact in the real estate market. One of those things is that, first off, they're not a particularly large generation in a lot of ways. Like, just in terms of the number of from a population standpoint, Gen X is not the largest generational group that we have had. And so that has obviously depressed some of their impact in the market. But also Gen X, I don't have the exact dates that they were born. I think it's roughly 65 to 85, something like that, 1965 to 1985. Gen X kind of came of age at a very strange time, right? They went through a recession around the year 2000, the dot-com bubble. A lot of them were in the workforce at that time. So if they were involved in a technology space, they were impacted then. And then less than a decade later, they went through the Great Recession. That really crushed them. And then here they are, you know, after going through basically two major recessions in a decade span. And the Great Recession obviously lasted into, you know, basically the middle of the 2010s. That just really, really crushed Gen X, right? Because that was when they would have normally been at the time of starting families, buying larger homes, things like that. And so they were really set behind in a lot of ways, unfortunately. And you know, a lot of people like to make fun of all these different generations. I don't necessarily. I think that Gen X just got dealt a bad hand. And I'm considered an older or an elder millennial. My generation was dealt a bad hand as well. And we complain about that a lot. But I really think that Gen X was dealt an even worse hand. The difference is that in addition to all of these things I just described, Gen X also missed all of the internet stuff, right? So unless they were in the technology space, and like I said, those that were in the technology space, a lot of them got crushed in the early 2000s. But unless they were early adopters for technology, a lot of them are not as involved economically in the technology side of our economy. And so all of these things combined, I think, has just kind of caused Gen X to not have the same impact in the economy and the real estate market. And some of that is based on data, some of that is based on speculation. But from the standpoint of simply real estate, okay, I had some angry, the Gen X people came out for blood on my YouTube page about that podcast that I did. And I think that that's unwarranted because literally I was just looking at data. And so I would encourage you, if you're a Gen Xer and you're upset that people are saying that millennials and boomers are driving the housing market right now, you need to redirect your anger, because you're basing it off of vibes, not off of data. And I don't base any of my real estate takes off of vibes, unless I just tell you that, hey, this is strictly an opinion, this is strictly what I'm feeling anecdotally. But that podcast was not a vibes-based podcast. I was just looking at NAR data. And if you don't like that, take that up with the NAR. Take that up with the National Association of Realtors. All right, Sheila Smith asks, how much are 3 bedrooms going for now? All right, this is a pretty easy one to answer in the Greenville market. I'm not going to answer this in the U.S. market as a whole. It's actually hard to answer in the U.S. market as a whole. But in the Greenville market, if we look at April of 2024, which is, we don't yet have the May data yet. 3-bedroom homes in Greenville as of April 2024 were selling for $285,900. That was the median for 3-bedroom homes in Greenville, $285,900. The median for all homes was $310,000. So obviously that was boosted a bit by homes larger than 3 bedrooms. But if you're looking for a 3-bedroom home, you're looking to spend about $286,000 in the Greenville market right now. Ian McCormick asks, longtime listener of the show, what are the headwinds you foresee for the Greenville market? I have a few things here. First off, pretty much everything in Greenville comes back to affordability, right? Because a big reason why people move to the Carolinas or stay in the Carolinas is to have what they can get in other places, right? Those big city amenities, but at a cheaper price. That is what Greenville has. Greenville has basically everything you can get in a bigger city, but at a cheaper price. So the higher prices and the higher mortgage rates go up, the more that hurts the market here, because that is a fundamental selling point of our market, right? People don't go to New York or San Francisco because prices are so affordable in New York and San Francisco. People don't go to rural areas simply because of affordability. They go to rural areas because they want to be out in the country, generally speaking. But Greenville, people come to Greenville in large part because of affordability. That is a huge selling point. And already I'm hearing from people relocating here from more expensive areas that they're surprised that Greenville isn't as cheap as they thought. And there's a lot of reasons for this. And all of these contribute to the headwinds. One I talk about a lot is NIMBYism, right? People that want, that say that they're okay with residential development, they just don't want it in their backyard. NIMBY spells not in my backyard. Listen, if we don't build, then housing just becomes more unaffordable. That's the reality of the situation. Here's the hypocrisy of those that are NIMBYs that want to stop residential development in their area, is that they're not trying to stop commercial development. Commercial development brings more people from the workforce, right? Commercial development, offices, retail, restaurants, things of that nature, that creates people that that creates jobs in an area. Well, those people working those jobs need a place to live. And if they don't have it, again, that increases the cost of living in the area. And that just causes more affordability issues. Additionally, another factor here is investors. The past few years, because of mortgage rates being where they are, haven't been able to afford to purchase rentals. And long term, this will result in the cost of rent going up. We haven't seen that yet because we've had enough apartments being built that that the cost of rent hasn't been impacted by the unaffordability of rental properties. But for those not wanting to live in an apartment, you're going to see most likely in the very near future rent for single family homes being a lot less affordable. Another headwind. In addition, and again, these are all tied back into affordability, property tax increases, both as a result of inflation and as a result of government increases. So we already have a mechanism whereby the county and the state are able to increase taxes simply by reassessing, which they do after a sale. and which they do, I believe, every 5 years if there isn't a sale. But they're pretty conservative on reassessing every 5 years. Really, the big assessments happen after a home is sold. They reassess it and change the value of the property, which then causes it to become more expensive property taxes. But also, we've had millage increases in recent years, and this is gaining more and more traction. And so as property taxes increase, that obviously hurts affordability as well. And listen, there's a lot of discussions being made right now about how do we bring in more revenue in order to take care of infrastructure issues in Greenville, which I'm about to get to in a second here. And property taxes seeing increases, I could 100% see that continuing on both fronts. Obviously, as they keep reassessing, there's going to be more just organic increases that way. But I could totally see them trying to increase those millage rates even further in order to see greater property taxes increases across the board. Another one, homeowners insurance increases. This is all over the country. The Carolinas so far has been pretty, relatively speaking, immune to this in comparison to the states around us. But I think it's only a matter of time before we start to see some really shocking homeowners insurance increases. All it takes is one more big hurricane to come through our state, and it's going to happen. And so that's something that I really am on the lookout for and am really concerned. Okay, what's going to happen with homeowners insurance? What are we going to see on that front? And again, comes back to affordability. Everything comes back to affordability. Now, the one thing that doesn't inherently come back to affordability but does indirectly is what I just mentioned, which is infrastructure issues. That is another major headwind because people come here, they want Greenville, and the people that live here, they want Greenville to continue to be a nice area. Well, guess what? If you've got infrastructure issues, and the one that comes up the most are problems with our roads, they don't have enough money to pay for fixing the roads currently, which is why we're now introducing a penny sales tax in order to help to pay for the roads. Listen, that's a problem. People don't want to come here, and they won't want to come here if the infrastructure is falling apart. People won't want to stay here if the infrastructure is falling apart. And so if our local government doesn't get out in front of this soon, we're going to have problems on our hands very, very quickly. And that's why I came out in favor a few weeks ago, my podcast, for voting in favor of the penny sales tax. Eric Mitchell, realtor in my office, he asks, boxers or briefs? All right, so I told you there would be some funny ones in here. Boxers or briefs? And my response is, why not both, right? Boxer briefs makes it to where you don't have to choose, right? Why make up a false choice when you can literally have a hybrid of the two? Now, my personal opinion is that you really can't go wrong. There really isn't a wrong answer to this question regardless, except for one thing, and that is whitey tighties or tidy whiteys. I've heard them both ways. Those are out of the question. Those are not acceptable in 2024. If you're wearing whitey tighties, you need to see the light. There are other forms of briefs that that don't look like that, and you shouldn't be in 2024 wearing whitey tighties. I'll just leave it at that. So that's my answer to that question. David Sutton asks, who have been your favorite clients and why is it the Suttons? You know what? I'm going to entertain this question. It is the Suttons because they have referred clients to me. And that is really the quickest way to my heart as a realtor is if you refer clients to me, you will always be loved by me. And so David and Alyssa, you guys are beloved clients of mine. You were great clients and have been great clients multiple times that I've helped you, but you have referred business to me. You have given the good word for me to other people that have ultimately used me as their realtor. And for that, I am indebted and I greatly appreciate that. And that is why you guys are my favorite clients. Willie Warren King asks, rent or buy? Okay. Now, I can't answer this for everyone, right? And I'm not going to give the realtor answer that it's always best to buy. There are times when renting obviously makes sense. And I mean, really, let's be realistic here. Almost everyone has had to rent or has to rent at some point, like renting. There's nothing evil about it. I'm not going to be one, again, I'm not going to be one of those realtors that makes it out as renting is this big evil. But that said, there is a massive wealth gap between those who own their primary residence and those who rent. I was looking at the numbers recently. I don't have them in front of me, but it's huge. I mean, that there is a clear delineation between those who rent and those who own their primary residence and how much wealth they have. Now, you can get into the whole correlation versus causation debate, but I'm not really sure how relevant that is. In other words, even if you make the argument that home ownership isn't a path to wealth, wealthy people obviously know what to do with their money, and one of the things that they do is purchase real estate. And one of the things that they don't do is rent where they live. Now, I've mentioned this on the show before, that Warren Buffett once said that he would have saved money renting versus owning his primary residence, but that he didn't purchase his home to build wealth. He purchased it to build memories. Can you make memories in a place you're renting? Of course. But what if the rent increases to the point where you can no longer afford it? What if the landlord sells the home and the new landlord doesn't want you to live in there? Maybe they want to live in there. What if the landlord stops making repairs or doesn't make good repairs and now you're living in a house that's falling apart or that you have to now start making repairs on behalf of the landlord, etc., etc.? These are more the questions about renting versus owning that I think are relative versus strictly looking at it from a number standpoint. At the end of the day, owning is about control. Cost control, you control your finances because now you have a 30-year fixed rate mortgage without a landlord ready to raise your rent each year. You control what you do with the home inside and outside of it. You control, like I just said, inside of it, how the home is updated, how the home is maintained, all of these things. It's about control. Do you want to control things related to where you live, or are you willing to take the risk of someone else controlling a lot of those things? And that is why, because it's in American DNA that we like control, that is why Americans love to own versus rent. Now, there's one very, very clear scenario, however, in which I always recommend renting. And that is if you think there's a possibility that you may move in the next 24 months, my opinion is that you should rent. And the simple reason for that is that even though real estate values historically do go up over time, there can be down markets. And a down market can happen very quickly, and it can last several years. I mean, it doesn't normally last more than a year or two, but it can. I mean, we're kind of in a down market now. We've talked about this before. And we've kind of been in a bit of a down market since mid-2022. It's certainly a suppressed market, right? There is demand being held back by, you know, what's happening with mortgage rates and all of that. And so it's risky business. It's very risky business if you know for a fact that you're not going to live in a house for more than 2 years to go ahead and purchase it because the market could shift. You could find yourself 2 years from now being underwater on your mortgage or unable to sell, being locked into keeping that house because you would have to bring money to the closing table in order to sell. And there's just no way. There's no way to predict exactly what's going to happen a year from now, 2 years from now. I've tried doing it. Economists tried doing it. We're always wrong in one way or another. And so the only way to ensure that that doesn't happen, if you buy your house or if you're looking to buy, make sure that you're planning to live there for a while. Maybe you won't find yourself in this apocalyptic situation I'm talking about. Maybe you will find yourself in a scenario where 2 years from now, your home has gained a ton of value. Certainly a lot of people lately have found that. And that's a great problem to have, but you might not. You might find that you buy and then 2 years later, your home is worth about the same or perhaps even less than what you bought it for, depending on what happens in the market. We don't know. And so if your living situation is up in the air and you think in a year or two you might have to move, I would recommend renting. Catherine Gushu asks, Kendrick or Drake? All right, some of you won't get this. Probably most of you will. All right, here's what I have to say about this. Traditionally, I do not listen to music that has words in it that I am not allowed to sing along with. And if you know, you know. Kendrick and Drake will say things that under no circumstances am I going to be just out walking around downtown Greenville singing those lyrics. So traditionally speaking, these are not singers that artists that I'm going to be listening to simply for that reason. I like to be able to sing along on some level with the songs. Now, that being said, I do still have an opinion on this, and my answer is Drake. I am not... Now, I know that there was this whole, like, diss track thing going on between Kendrick and Drake a few weeks ago. It is what it is. Apparently, people that are more into this than I am think that Kendrick won. Listen, I don't care about that for starters, but regardless, I don't like Kendrick's voice. Like, I'm sorry, that style of hip-hop rap voice just doesn't resonate with me. So give me Drake. I'm going Drake all day. I don't care what happened with the whole diss track thing. Caitlin Marcel asks, what are the differentiators between the South Carolina upstate market versus the rest of the U.S. real estate market year to date? Very surgically precise question there. All right, few things here. Not going to get too in the weeds. We talk about market stats a lot here. So one, South Carolina is one of 8 states to see 60% or greater appreciation the past 4 years. Some other states that initially saw big appreciation like Texas have cooled down in the past 2 years. I've got a little chart here, actually. I should have pulled this up earlier. Give me 1 second. All right, here we go. If you're watching on YouTube, you will be able to see this. And my disclaimer, as I've said a few times recently, that now YouTube has an audio version for the podcast. If you find my channel, Selling Greenville Pod, you've just got to do a little bit of extra work to find the video. All right, so here we go. I'm showing up a graphic. There are 8 states that the past 4 years, so between this graph specifically, between March 2020 and March 2024, there are 8 states that have seen 60% or greater appreciation during that period of time. South Carolina is one of the 8 states. I find that very interesting. The lowest state on here, in case you're wondering, in case you're listening, not watching, Louisiana, 22%. There aren't any states that have had a decrease in real estate or a depreciating market the past 4 years. But South Carolina is sitting right at 60%. The highest one on here, interestingly, is Maine at 68%. So I find that to be quite interesting. Here's another one for you, Caitlin. I would say inventory is pretty close to pre-pandemic levels here in the upstate market. Now, most of the country, believe it or not, is actually still well below pre-pandemic levels of inventory. Although I need to caveat that with most major areas are well above pre-pandemic. So here's what we're experiencing. Most major metro areas are seeing inventory soaring, like San Francisco, for instance, like New York City, seeing some major increases in inventory from what I've seen in some data points. And sometimes it's based on specific counties or specific boroughs or what have you. But generally speaking, that's a good rule of thumb. But countrywide, most of the country is not in those major metro areas. And countrywide is still seeing a lot of inventory numbers that are still below pandemic levels. So I'm going to share another little graph here. Here we can see the weekly available inventory, and you can see if you're watching this video that 2024 is still well below what 2017 through 2019 was. So that is something on a meta level in the U.S. that we're seeing. But contrast that if you're listening to this, listen to last week's episode where I talked about the market stats. Inventory in Greenville is really, really close to what it was pre-pandemic. So we're either at or really close to what we saw inventory-wise pre-pandemic, which is a difference than the rest of the country. Here's another one for you. Greenville, let's talk about affordability. Greenville is still more affordable than most of the country. The median average priced home in that sells in Greenville is $310,000, and that's the greater Greenville area. That's not just Greenville proper. Versus the rest of the country, it's $420,000. So Greenville is substantially cheaper. $420,000 versus $310,000 in Greenville. That is the difference in the cost of the median priced home in the U.S. versus our market here. That's a substantial difference. I mean, you know, that's a 30% increase. So that's a major thing to consider. And then one more thing for you, Caitlin. A larger percentage of construction than normal is devoted towards rental properties here in the Greenville area. This is something a lot of people don't realize. There's a lot of angst about construction and development in Greenville right now. But guess what? A lot of the construction, you know, people tend to get upset mostly at all of the housing communities being built to sell to people. But we have a ton of housing being built simply to rent. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I've had a lot of talks about this on the show, how I am a YIMBY. Yes, in my backyard, I want to see more development in Greenville. Smart development, not just all development. But building property to rent helps the market as a whole. It helps bring affordability into the market as a whole. So it is still a good thing. So I'm not saying that this is a bad thing. I'm just simply pointing out Greenville is one of the top 20, and I've got another graph on here if you're watching on YouTube. Greenville is one of the top 20 metro area housing markets with the most build-to-rent home completions as of 2023. So it's on this list. The list is Phoenix is number one, then Dallas, Atlanta, Austin, Charlotte, Detroit, Kansas City, Columbus, San Antonio, Nashville, Jacksonville, and then Greenville. And then after Greenville is Las Vegas, Pensacola, Houston, Orlando, Akron, Indianapolis, Salt Lake, and Riverside, California. So that's a very interesting list to me because there are some major, major metro areas on this list. And Greenville makes the middle of the pack and is over areas like Orlando and Houston. So we have a lot of build-to-rent completions happening in the Greenville market right now in contrast to other parts of the country. All right, Nick. I'm sorry, Nick. I always butcher your name. Catanero, I believe, is how I'm supposed to pronounce your name. Longtime listener of the show, so I apologize. I need to figure out, next time we talk, I'm going to ask you how to pronounce your name. Nick Catanero, he asks, home inspection and proactively address the unknown before listing a home, or take a chance and let the buyer inspect, provide repair requests, and address what they ask for, or a combination of both? Okay. If you're selling a home, do you have it inspected and have things addressed prior to listing it, or do you wait until the buyer has their own inspections and comes along and then makes their own requests? Here's generally speaking the way I approach this. I generally don't think a seller needs to perform inspections on their home. There's a few reasons for this. One is that a buyer might not do inspections to begin with. I run into this all the time. Not every buyer does normal inspections. And so you might actually be going above and beyond what even your buyer would be asking you to do. Additionally, your inspector might be a better inspector than what the buyer has. And here's what happens. Once you have your home inspected, now you know a bunch of material facts about that home. Now you have to disclose those facts. Legally, you have to disclose the things that are wrong with your home if you haven't addressed those things. And so generally speaking, I say, why do the buyer's work for them? The buyer is still going to have it inspected. You know, if I'm representing a buyer and a seller provides an inspection report, I'm still going to recommend to the buyer that they have their own independent inspection done because things could have changed since that inspection was done by the seller. Who knows? They might not have done the repairs correctly. There's a whole lot of things involved with that. So I say, let the buyer do all that themselves. Now, there are some exceptions, right? Let's say that it's a house that that is a luxury home, and we need to get out in front of things because people are going to nitpick the home when they go through. Okay, that could be a good instance in which you want to go ahead and have a home inspection. Let's say that you already know that there's a bunch of stuff wrong, but you're not exactly sure what those things are. That's a good example to go ahead and have an inspection done. Let's just go ahead, we're going to have to disclose things anyway. So let's just go ahead and do this the right way the first time. The other thing that I'll say is if you know of a very specific thing, have that very specific thing inspected. So for instance, I flipped a house recently where a neighbor told me that they had septic tank issues. And so I had my septic inspector come out and look at it. Sure enough, there was something wrong with it. It wasn't a hard fix. He went out, he fixed it. And that was that. I didn't have to have a full-blown inspection done. It was just an inspection on that specific thing. And that was that. We addressed it. And that's something that I was able to include for the buyer to put their peace of mind. All right. Charlie Johnson asks, now this is the most niche question I got out of all of this, and it's not real estate related, so I apologize, but I'm still going to answer because I love the question. He asks for a ranking of Stonemaier games. Okay, for those that don't know me well, I'm a big board gamer, and one of my favorite board game creators is called Stonemaier Games. They do just a fantastic job of creating board games, they've created some of my favorite games. So he wants me to rank Stonemaier games. I need to caveat, there's several that I've never played before. I've never played Red Rising, Pendulum, Libertalia, Charterstone, Smitten, Between Two Castles, or Between Two Cities, I don't think. I don't remember ever having played those. I may have played one of them one time, but it wasn't noteworthy to me. So with that in mind, I'm going to go through the other ones that I have played, and I'm going to rank them starting at the bottom with my least favorite. And my least favorite of the ones that I played is Rolling Realms. I'm not here to make fun of Rolling Realms. It's a cool little game idea that he came up with, Jamie Stegmaier came up with during the pandemic. And it's just not my thing. I'm just not a big fan of it. My second from the bottom game is Tapestry. I felt like it was a little bit of an indulgent game. Now, it's a beautiful game. Has some of the most beautiful components that I have ever seen in a game. But it was just a little bit indulgent to me from the standpoint of just so heavy. So many things to do. So many things to keep track of. And I like heavy games. But that was just above and beyond. It just took all the joy out of it. Next on the list for me, Expeditions, which is the sequel to Scythe. Expeditions, I like the game, I don't love it. It's a lot of reading, and I do feel like that there are one or two cards in the game that if you get those cards, you have a huge advantage. I feel like that is a bit of a flaw to the game. That being said, I do still like it, I own it, when they come out with expansions for it, there's a good chance that I will buy those expansions, and perhaps that'll make me like it a little bit more. Next on the list, Wormspan. This is a sequel of sorts to the Wingspan game. Wormspan, similar mechanics to Wingspan. I just have one really big bone to pick with it, and that is that Wingspan is a game that is basically an engine building kind of worker placement style game. They both are. But Wingspan is great for me in that it has a finite number of turns that you can take during a round. Whereas Wormspan, you can increase how many turns you take, and I actually don't like that. I think it just muddies the water. I think it makes the entire game focused around just trying to squeeze as many turns into a round as possible. I'm not a fan of that. Next on the list, My Little Scythe. This is a kid's game, and to me, it's the best kid's game that I've ever played. It's phenomenal. It's definitely a more difficult kid's game, but it's not that difficult, and it's fun for adults to play. Next on the list, Euphoria. This is one of the older Stonemaier games. I love it. It's a very unique game that is challenging. If you get two or more good Euphoria players together, it really makes for a lot of unique interaction and usually comes right down to the wire. Next up, Viticulture, a winemaking game. I love Viticulture. Fantastic game. It's a little bit long, right? And it's very challenging to teach to a new person. Mechanically, not that hard, but just strategy-wise, very difficult. But it's just a lot of fun. It's a game that I really enjoy playing, and the expansions for that one only made it better. Next on the list is Scythe. Scythe is the closest thing to like a video game that I've ever played in a board game. It's a basically a world that you're, you know, you're trying to get territory control, but you're also, there is a bit of worker placement elements in it. Just a whole lot of different elements to the game of Scythe. It was one of the first heavy games that I ever played. I still love it. It has a campaign mode. I mean, it has, there's so much that that game has to offer. Tons of expansions. Really phenomenal game. Next up, I've already referenced Wingspan. From the moment I played Wingspan, I loved it. Wingspan is really unique in that you have an individual board, and you're actually, it's a kind of a deck building game, but not in the traditional sense. You're gaining cards, and then you're placing them on your board, and then those, that, in the process of doing that, you're actually upgrading your board. And that then makes your turns more powerful in the future. I love that. And then last but not least, my favorite out of all the Stonemaier games is Apiary. To me, Apiary, it's a game based on the concept that bees have evolved to the point where they're now colonizing space. Crazy theme, but I really like that it is a worker placement game where all spaces are available. It has a bumping mechanism that Euphoria also has. But Apiary is one of the few games that every single turn you have something really great that you can do if you want. There's never just a turn that's just wasted. Maybe the last turn, if you've not set yourself up well, might be a wasted turn. But there's always something to do. It's always good. There's nothing that can hurt you. You're only ever benefited by anything that you can do or that happens to you in the game. All right. There we go. That's my ranking of Stonemaier games. All right. Alden Simpson asks, how will buyer agents be compensated after the recent NAR lawsuit? Okay. So let's make one thing clear. Buyer agent compensation didn't change, except that it can no longer be advertised in MLS. It can still be advertised in other places. And long story short, here's what I think. I think that probably about 10 to 15% of new listings are, after these changes go into effect in August, are going to have much less commissions being offered, maybe no commissions being offered to a buyer's agent. But guess what? Buyer's agents are still going to ask for those commissions. And basically what I'm hearing from buyer's agents in our area is that probably a lot of them aren't even going to ask the listing agent or the seller if they're offering a buyer agent compensation. They're just going to send in a compensation form with an offer that asks for the seller or the listing brokerage to compensate the buyer's agent. Now I'm can't really discuss how much, you know, actual percent numbers or anything like that. I just personally think, just based on what I've seen and heard, I think that really in terms of the actual amount of compensation, it's not going to change a whole lot from what we've had historically. What's going to change is how it's communicated and then how it's presented. And so we already have a compensation form, that we've had in the Greenville market for a very long time. It's only been used traditionally for sale by owner properties, or properties where people from a different area that aren't a part of our MLS are using, or if I'm working, you know, doing a deal in an area where I'm not a part of the MLS. So like for instance, Western Upstate, I'm not a part of Western Upstate MLS. So if I show a house out there, I need to have a compensation agreement signed by the listing brokerage in order for me to be compensated out there, things of that nature. That form is now just going to expand in terms of how it's used. It's going to be used for probably just about every transaction. I think that that's a very real possibility moving forward, but we'll have to see. Amy Parsons asks, you mentioned in a recent podcast about some cautions for candidates from a specific caucus. How can I find out what caucus, say a county councilor, member or a state house or state senator supports? I find it easier to get that information on a national level. Here's what I would recommend. These caucuses are really, you know, they're kind of similar to like the Tea Party. It's not really, the Tea Party wasn't really a party. The Freedom Caucus isn't really a caucus. These are just words that are being used to basically differentiate some candidates from others. Here's what I'd recommend. Go to their website. Go find them on social media and see what they say. If they say that they associate with a certain group, take them for their word. If they don't specifically identify a specific group, then you can kind of reverse engineer based on the things that they, the platform that they're running on, whether they, you know, might be with of the mindset that they are kind of a lone ranger or not. Because that's really my main concern with these subgroups within these very niche groups that are running for office, is that they see themselves as like a lone ranger, that they you know, want to come in and shake things up, and here we go, we're gonna, you know, get 20 or 30 of us together and we're gonna shake things up. It's just not gonna happen. 20 or 30 is not enough to shake things up in the state house. And so look at all of those things, see what they say about themselves, see who they identify with, and you'll be able to find out a lot by just looking them up online and looking at what they're saying on social media. Richard Cox, broker, not my broker, but a broker with C. Dan Joyner at the Augusta Road office, he asks, is a hot dog a sandwich? And I don't see how you can argue that it's not a sandwich, right? Like, is the fact, are you going to make the argument that the Frankfurter that you use for the meat, that that's not real meat? Or that, you know, a brat, that that's not real meat? There's a lot of meat that we put on a sandwich that isn't real meat. I mean, like, what's pastrami? Like, what's corned beef? You know, things like that that are, like, really popular in the Northeast, that, you know, maybe aren't as popular down here. I mean, what about even, like, gyro meat? We're combining, like, beef and lamb together. Like, that's not real meat. So we're going to specifically identify hot dogs and say, okay, that's not real meat. It's shaped weird. I'm not going to consider that a sandwich. No, it's meat and toppings between bread. That's a sandwich. And I don't care if you hate me for saying that. That is my take on this. Now, Richard followed that up with a more serious question, which is our final question of today. And that's, what's the number one reason why now is the most important time to have realtor representation? I'm ending with this one because some of you might want to bow out. They don't want to hear me tooting realtors' horns. And that's totally fine. But here's what I'm going to say, why it's important to have realtor representation right now. As the market has shifted in recent years, it's become more difficult for both buyers and sellers, okay? It's not shifted one way or the other. It's become more difficult all around in real estate. Buyers are facing the most unaffordable market in history. Sellers are facing the most extreme shift in rates and inventory in recent history. And the result is that a lot of the old norms are gone. So if you bought or sold a house 10 years ago, the market is dramatically different now. If you bought or sold a house 5 years ago, the market is even more dramatically different now. And if you bought or sold a house 2 years ago, you'd be shocked. The market is dramatically different now than it was even 2 years ago. And when I say market, I don't just mean, you know, whether it's a buyer's or a seller's market. I'm saying the entire process of buying and selling real estate on the retail market is different. And when I talk to the vast majority of people, not everyone, right, not, you know, seasoned investors or people like that, but the vast majority of just normal people who, you know, are going to buy or sell 4 to 5 homes in their lifetime, and who are trying to go at real estate without an agent, it comes out pretty quickly. These people trying to do it all on their own without a professional don't know how much things have changed since the last time they bought or sold real estate. They'll start talking about how when they bought their home last time, they were able to get a USDA loan, but they don't realize that their area no longer qualifies for USDA loans because things have changed. They'll talk about how, you know, when they bought, the seller had to fix something that now a seller is no longer required to fix. They don't know what radon is. They think their closing attorney actually represents them like a defense attorney does, without realizing that closing attorneys are representatives of the entire real estate transaction, and they aren't going to defend you or litigate on your behalf if you run into a problem with the other party. They don't know what to do if they get a low appraisal. They don't know whether or not a home needs to be brought up to code to sell. There's just a lot of things like this. If I ever talk to someone that's not represented by a realtor, very quickly things come out that's like, okay, yeah, you don't know this, you don't know that, et cetera, et cetera. And I'll mention this one as well. This is one I run into a lot, is not understanding how home values work. I had one person that wasn't represented by a realtor who looked at all the homes in their area, looked at what they sold for when they were built, and then looked at what they had sold for the past year, and then they took the percent increase from when the home was sold when it was first built, and then what it sold for most recently, and then they took that percent increase and then applied that to their own home to reverse engineer what their own home was worth. That's not how you determine a home value at all. But these are the types of things that you run into with people that are not professional real estate people. They're not real estate professionals. Now, I'm not trying to make fun of those people. I'm not trying to make fun of the general populace and their lack of knowledge about real estate. Not at all. But it is insulting when someone who has done like something 3 to 4 times in their life think that they know as much about that thing as a person that's done it hundreds of times in their life. I could give instance after instance where I used a negotiation strategy that got a seller money that they wouldn't have been able to get on their own, even after my commission. I could give instance after instance of buyers who got a house that they wouldn't have gotten without an extremely creative offer structure that they hadn't and wouldn't have thought of themselves, or perhaps I was even able to help them to buy a house for lower than they would have been able to because I used a unique negotiation strategy. It's just a whole lot of things like that. And again, I hate to toot my own horn, but this, I'm just being honest with you guys. This is the reality of the situation. And, you know, people that think that they know more than a real estate professional, to me, it's not quite this extreme, but it's kind of like when a person has a medical need and instead of going to a doctor, they try to self-diagnose and self-treat themselves because they don't like doctors or they think that doctors charge too much. Are you really willing to risk your health like that? And some of you are like, yes, I am willing to do that. Well, I am not. I am not that type. I trust professionals. Now, you've got to ask the right questions with doctors. You've got to ask the right questions with realtors as well. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you've got a major medical need, you need to have a professional take care of that. Don't self-diagnose. Don't self-treat. Similar with real estate. Are you willing to get less money selling your home and have it take longer, which stats clearly show is what happens in for sale by owner situations? Are you willing to take that risk? Or do you think that you'll be the exception to the rule? Are you willing to miss out on your dream home because even though maybe you're a skilled negotiator, you know, maybe you're in sales, you don't know how to negotiate real estate. I can't tell you how many times I've had people that are salespeople who tell me how they think I should negotiate, and they clearly don't know what they're doing because negotiating real estate is different, right? It's a very personal transaction. You don't negotiate the same with something really personal that you do with something that's really impersonal. And so these are the types of things that people don't consider when they try to go at it on their own. So I think to answer your question, Richard, I think the biggest reason is that we're in an ever-changing market. We're about to have realtor compensation related things changing. And people that aren't professionals in this marketplace simply aren't aware of that. They don't have their ear to the ground. They don't know all that's going on, and they're at risk of getting hosed in a real estate transaction if they go it on their own. So thank you guys for the great questions. If you enjoyed this episode, let me know, because if you did, I would like to do more of these in the future. I'm not going to do them every month, but maybe, you know, once a quarter or, you know, something like that. So let me know if you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. Thank you for all the great questions. Thank you guys for listening. If you need a realtor in the Greenville market, please reach out to me. My contact information is in the show notes. And if you enjoyed this content, please rate, subscribe, review, all of those good things. And we will talk again next time.